me by August the 17th. There is one huge announcement. Oh, and by the way, the board of directors is going to be meeting next Tuesday at 6:30. That's also going to be virtual. And anyone who wants to participate, sit in on the meeting, as it were, you would be welcome. You simply need to let me know that, and I will get you the remote access links so that you can participate in our board meeting. The big announcement is this, and it is huge. Fred Phelps, the infamous Fred Phelps, is now deceased and gone on to his just rewards, I hope. He is no longer the largest contributor to the First Friday Breakfast Club scholarship program. Many of you will recall the notorious anti-gay, God hates gays, God hates fags, Fred Phelps. He, several years ago, came with a group of his followers to protest the First Friday Breakfast Club and its speaker, Ambassador James Hormel, the first openly gay United States ambassador ever appointed. We launched a fundraiser. We dropped the P from Phelps and labeled it a Phelps Helps fundraiser. And that initiative asked people to pledge some amount of money, from a penny to the sky's the limit, for every minute that Phelps's minions were outside protesting us. Pledge that money for the scholarship program. By the time it was over, those demonstrations generated just over $22,000 for the First Friday Breakfast Club scholarship program. And until this year, that stood as the record fundraising initiative. Thank you, Fred Phelps. He was responsible for more money coming to the scholarship program than anyone else among us or outside of our group. This year changes that. Our longtime FFBC member, Cliff Paulson, who died last year, many of us who have been longtime members would remember him. He was a faithful attender. He died last year. And he named FFBC's scholarship program as a beneficiary of his will. One of four beneficiaries. That bequest turned out to be $67,293.33. That legacy stands, as the largest single contribution to the scholarship program in our history. And I suspect that it will stand as the record for some time. It brings us close to $400,000 raised for the scholarship program over the course of our history. Posthumously, I want to thank Cliff Paulson. You were and are a great friend of FFBC. And next, I will turn to David Cotton to introduce our speaker for this morning. David?
Thank you, Jonathan. Today's speaker is Tim Thompson from Omaha, Nebraska. He's going to talk about an organization that personally is very important to me, the Mankind Project, or you may hear it referred to as MKP. I'm a member of that Des Moines Mankind Project community. In fact, it's the community that hosts the monthly online opens men's group on the first Monday of the month that some FFBC members participate in, and still can if you have not. Let me know if you're interested. But today he's going to talk about an aspect of MKP that I don't have any experience in, so I'm very excited to hear about that. He joined the project in September 2010, and prior to that membership, he actively participated in 12-step programs, community outreach, and mentoring programs for LGBTQ youth. In September 2020, Tim participated in MKP's New Warrior Training Adventure, an NTWA, which is the contemporary form of initiation and staff 26 of those weekend training adventures, four of which are designed for GBTQ men. He is currently the chair of the Central Plains Leader Body, a group that works to train and certify initiated men to lead NWTAs and other training programs offered through the Mankind Project. He's a co-leader candidate, which is no easy task, and is planning to sit for certification in 2021. Tim, welcome, and we look forward to hearing more. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here, actually. You know, I used to work in Des Moines. I had an office here in Omaha and an office downtown in Des Moines, and I drive up there every week and stay overnight Thursday, then work Friday, then drive home. And I wish I would have known about this. It would have been great to hang out with y'all on a Friday morning and then go into the office. But alas, I don't do that anymore. Again, thanks for having me. My name's Tim Thompson. I'm a member of Mankind Project. And as David mentioned, I'm also on the leader track here in Omaha to get certified to lead these weekends. And what I wanted to talk to you about today is the new warrior training adventure, MKP, how it's impacted the style of leadership that I have, as well as the GBTQ Gateway weekends that we also host, and kind of what the differences between a traditional new warrior training adventure and the Gateway. And then my experience with both, so I can give you kind of a comparison. So by show of hands, how many people are familiar with Mankind Project or have heard David talk about it? Is few? Okay, good. Well, so that my elevator speech for Mankind Project is, it goes like this, basically. We're an organization of men that initiate other men so that they can be their best person possible. And the theory or the philosophy behind that is men don't have rites of passages these days, and so they grow up and mature. And then for some men, they have children and raise children being immature men. And it creates the cycle of generations of immature men. So what the New Warrior Training Adventure is basically an initiation for men. It starts on a Friday evening and it ends on a Sunday afternoon. And the process of the weekend is basically you come in and you psychologically break yourself apart like a puzzle. And you look at all the different pieces that are laying around. And you determine which ones are the pains or the struggles in your life. And you get to do all kinds of processes to not necessarily resolve them, but at least take a good hard look and put together a plan on how you can resolve them. And then you put yourself back together and you walk out with the mission. I mean, that's really in a nutshell what the weekend's about. There's actually 93 processes that you go through from Friday to Sunday throughout the weekend. So it's a busy weekend. There's physical activities that we do. There's emotional activities. We, address male sexuality, which is interesting when, especially on a traditional weekend where you've got a lot of straight men, and you get to talk about penises. They get really uncomfortable, which is awesome. But for me, I went through the weekend. I was 23 years sober at the time, and my sponsor, was on leader track, and he kept inviting me saying, I think you should really do this weekend. I think this would really enhance your recovery. And I kept having excuses and excuses and excuses. And after about the 10th time, I finally just said, yeah, I'll go ahead and do this weekend. So it was in September of 2010 and it was in Sioux City. And, he recommended that I go into the weekend and without doing any kind of research. I'm one of those types of people that want to do as much research as possible and have every answer that I could possibly have and have every scenario worked out in my head so that there's no surprises. And I promised that I would go into this weekend not doing any of that. So I walked in pretty much blind. And without giving away what happens on the weekend, I can say that I stepped so far outside of my comfort zone that I couldn't see the line. And even though the only person that I knew that was staffing the weekend was my sponsor, I never felt safer. And as a gay man growing up in a predominantly heterosexual environment, working in a predominantly heterosexual place of employment, that's a unique feeling. I grew up, to backtrack a little bit, I spent most of my adolescence living in Salt Lake City, and dealt with an awful lot of struggles when it came to my sexuality, especially through my adolescence. So anyways, the weekend that I attended was a traditional NWTA. So most of the references throughout the weekend were more heteronormative. Didn't bother me because I was just kind of always used to that, and I knew that the MKP was established by several straight men, and that was really their focus. But what's happened over the years in MKP is more and more GBTQ men have been attracted to it because of the empowerment aspect of it. And the other piece that was really helpful was me recognizing that I internalized a lot of stories from other people that made me feel like a second-class citizen, less than, and how that story that I had internalized became kind of the driving force behind my self-defeating behavior. So that said, that was my big aha on my weekend was, wow, I've internalized these stories and I'm perpetuating those. So I left that weekend with a mission. I left that weekend realizing that I have got stories that keep me from becoming who I really want to be. And I left with a new sense of confidence. I knew that I wanted to do the work. I knew I wanted to be one of those guys that was staffing a weekend before I got to that Sunday. And, matter of fact, when I got home, I went online and tried to find the next weekends to see if I could staff it. I ended up going to Salt Lake City in March of the following year and did my rookie staffing there. Realized at that point that I wanted to be on the leader track. So, one of the things that I really wanted to do though, when I got involved more on the leader track side was I wanted to experience what they call the Gateway Weekends. We, MKP does, Urban Weekend, which is considered a Gateway Weekend, which is predominantly men of color. We do an All Nations Weekend up in Pine Ridge Reservation, which is basically Indigenous men. We do, Hearing Impaired Weekend. We do a Hispanic Weekend. We do able-bodied or I don't want to say disabled, physically challenged weekends for men that may not be able to do the physical aspects of the work. And then the other one that we do is a GBTQ weekend. And I was really attracted to doing those. I wanted to do those. So I went to Houston and staffed it at, it's called North Zulch is the city or town, I should say. And they've got a campsite there that's ran by, an MKP brother, and they had the Gateway Weekend there. And I was told before I started staffing the Gateways that they're basically exactly the same. They just queer it up. And I don't know about you all, but when the term queer is used, sometimes it triggers me a little bit. So I had to kind of struggle with that a little bit on my first weekend, but I didn't know what they meant by queer up the weekend. By the end of that Sunday, I knew. And basically the difference between a traditional NWTA and the Gateway is they introduce a lot of our culture. There's more music. There's, some costumes, let's say. There's a lot more focus on being sensitive to using gender pronouns. They don't say little boys a lot of times. They'll say little ones. And those little nuances or those little tiny details really make a big difference. I have a friend, Eli, who he's a trans man, and he went through the Gateway Weekend that we hosted, that Central Plains in Kansas City hosted about 4 years ago. And he was very scared to go through it as a trans man, even though the weekend was for GBTQ men. He still was incredibly terrified. And that was one of the things that he pointed out to me after the weekend, was their sensitivity toward pronouns. And on a straight weekend or a traditional weekend, it's very heteronormative. It's very, they just don't use little one. They use little boy or man and not person. And, it's not as inclusive, I guess. So what's the difference between the two, and why would one person want to attend a gateway versus a traditional NWTA? A gateway is staffed by 90% GBTQ men and 10% allies. So a normal staff is 40 people. So 36 of the men that are on staff are GBTQ and 4 are allies. And there's usually about 20 straight men that apply for those 4 spots. So we picked the best of the best, basically. Participant-wise, it's the majority are GBTQ men. However, I did have my best friend went through a gateway weekend because he didn't want to deal with the macho crap from an NWTA, is what he said. So he attended a gateway that was in Florida with me. And that was a lot of fun. He's a fireman and rides a Harley, and he showed up and was just absolutely in heaven. And his wife was very grateful that he got to attend. Let's see. So we don't do a whole lot of NWTAs, the Gateway Weekends, throughout the year. I think we usually do about 6 or 7 throughout the United States. Part of the reason why is that we don't have the numbers of GBTQ men in the project in MKP. We're still a minority, which I anticipate we will be a minority for a long time. But our numbers are growing significantly. I staffed the last traditional NWTA I staffed was led by a gay man. The co-leader was a gay man. There were 6 of us that were on leader track, 4 of which were gay men. There were 5 guys on staff that were bi, or pansexual or gay. And then we had 1 trans man staffing the weekend. So that's some significant growth. They joke about it, but they're like, the gays are taking over a lot of times. And I love it because it's like, let them, you know, not only do we add a little bit of style to the weekend, but we also bring a sense of authenticity that I think is intimidating to straight men. You know, I don't know about you all, but I spent an awful lot of my time editing my behavior and who I was on the outside to keep myself safe. And I've done that in the workplace. I've done that in my family. I've done that in my circle of friends. And when I realized that I don't need permission to be authentic and could be authentic, I became a very powerful person. And, you know, and on weekends I show up, there's times that I've been the only gay man on staff, and it's awesome because I show up pretty big, you know. How it works in part of the appeal to MKP is also that it helps men with their leadership skills. It teaches you how to be an authentic leader that doesn't get into shadow or doesn't get into the toxic side of leadership, the tyrant or the abdicator. And what it's helped me do in my professional life is learn how to lead by example and learn how to have conversations and navigate through conflict and come up with equitable, results that everybody can be happy with. I implemented a accountability process with my employees, where when we have goals or we set agreements for the week to get jobs done, if we don't meet them, instead of getting mad at them, we talk about what the impact is to the company and to the team. And what I'm finding is people don't miss deadlines anymore. Very rarely do we have to have conversations about impact anymore. And I tell you what, it makes my job a lot easier as a manager. questions? I think we're like 20 minutes in right now, I think. Yeah. Does anybody have any questions for me?
As you, when a man finishes a weekend and then comes back home, what do they do or how do they participate and continue on that process?
That's a great question, David. We set up a mentoring program for all men that go through the weekend. So once you are done with the weekend, somebody from staff will call them, check in, make sure that they got home okay, make sure that, they're not having any additional questions. And then we do a big welcome home ceremony in their community. So all the guys that have been initiated and their spouses or significant others, kids, I mean, they can be kind of crazy. They all show up, they do kind of a potluck thing, and they welcome the guy into their community. Another very powerful thing, and I want to go back to Eli, was when Eli had his welcome home party in Omaha, he was pretty much overwhelmed by, 50 people showing up to welcome him into the community. As a trans man being welcomed into a predominantly heterosexual circle of men, it's pretty impressive. It was pretty moving. So once you go through the weekend and you've been initiated, is what they call it, and you've had your welcome home ceremony, there's follow-up program. It's an integration program where they teach men how to have and put on their own I-group. And what an I-group is, it's a circle of men that meet on a regular basis to get to continue to work on their missions, get to continue to work on the challenges they have in their lives that keep them from realizing their best selves. It's not a therapy session. It's just guys that love each other to the point where they're willing to say, I'm going to call, bully on that, or I'm going to help you be accountable. It's all about self-growth and having that support and camaraderie. There are a lot of cities in the United States that have strictly GBTQ I groups because they have enough men that have initiated that they can do that. My dream is to have that happen in Omaha. I want to have a GBTQ I group here that's thriving. That answer your question, David? Cool. Any more questions?
Tim, what is the cost of the weekend?
Well, it depends. Depends on where you're at. In some cities, it can go up to like $900 a month. We charge, I believe, $675 a month for the traditional weekend. And then we also have a weekend that's called the Wilderness Weekend, which they're going to actually, hopefully, knock on wood, be able to have in August in central Iowa, which outside of Des Moines, since the facility isn't necessary there because it's basically camping. And I have not done one of those yet. I'm tempted to do that. I'm still kind of struggling with the whole camping piece, but
we need you there next August.
Well, I know I'm already getting heat to sign up for that one. But since that weekend doesn't have the overhead, the cost is significantly less. I believe it's like $300. And I don't know. I've spent $5,000 on going to like leadership seminars. Tony Robbins charges $15,000 or something crazy like that. So it's a drop in the bucket. And personally, I'm kind of a cheap, tightwad type person, and it was definitely worth the investment for me. I got more out of it than years of therapy. I hate to say it. I hope there's no therapist here because it's important. But yeah, it really helped me a lot.
Now, sometimes there's some financial assistance depending on the man's situation as well.
Correct. Yeah, and it also it also depends on the community or the area. Some areas don't do that. Now in Asheville in North Carolina, they don't have a tuition or a fee. It's pay what you think the weekend was worth to you. So on Sunday, you basically write a check for what you feel the weekend was worth.
Interesting.
And so far they've been doing this for probably 5 years now. They've always been able to cover their expenses.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You said that you're on the track for certification.
Leadership. Yeah.
What does that entail?
Oh, it's quite a lengthy process. The men that lead the weekends have probably staffed anywhere between 50 and 100 times. So how that process works is when I wanted to become a guy that was on the leader track, I had to vocalize my intention or want with my local I group. And then I got to sit in what they call in a hot seat, where I got grilled as to why, what's my motives behind wanting to do this. Just a number of different things. And then they basically gave me a blessing to become part of the leader track. So once I got there, okay, then I took it to Central Plains, which is our area, which consists of South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota. And I had to sit in front of a group of men that represented all of the communities throughout our area and go through the same process again. And then they accepted and said, yes, we'll put you on leader track. Once I'm on leader track, then I get to work directly with a certified man on honing my skills as it pertains to the weekend. And so I have assignments that I do with him. I'm learning all 90-some processes backwards and forwards. I'm understanding like the energetic aspect of how the weekend flows. And then every couple of years, I have to sit for certification or another blessing as I move forward in the process. It starts with a leader in training. That's an LIT. Then after a couple of years, it goes to a co-leader candidate, which is where I'm at. And then in a couple more years, then you go and sit for your national certification, which is held twice a year. And that is where representatives from all over the country, all certified men who have gone through this, sit on a panel and you get hot seated for, I think it's like an hour long session where you basically get grilled by them. And then they decide if you're going to be a leader or not. And then from there, there's other certifications and there's leader trainers and there's other tiers after that, that you can do. But the whole process usually takes anywhere between 4 and 6 years to get through. I've been on leader track for 6 years now. I think it's been 6 years. Yeah, 6 years.
Now, Tim, I can see that this would be dealing with some fairly core issues, and a lot of people are going to be bringing baggage to this experience.
Oh yeah.
Are there sort of difficult times? Are there times when people are sort of coming undone or coming unglued or don't want to do this anymore? I'm going home on Saturday morning.
So part of the deal with the weekend is you're there voluntarily. If you decide Friday night you don't want to do it, you can leave if you want. If there are processes and activities that you don't want to participate in, you certainly can do that. And that on a gateway weekend, that's even more protected. In other words, they don't even challenge. If you say, I don't want to do that, they're like, okay, I'm going to respect that boundary. Whereas on a traditional weekend, they may check it out a little bit more, you know, kind of push them a little bit. Yes, people deal with an awful lot of emotional stuff on the weekend. That's what it's designed for. It's designed to crack people open and take a look at all those things that we've buried for so long. So yeah, even on the staffing side, there's work that's happening while the participants are doing their work in the other room. Gateways tend to deal a lot with wounds that we've acquired over the years, especially being GBTQ men. And then the counter to that is the empowerment piece and how those wounds can be reframed into power.
I would think that confidentiality would be a really critical piece. What kind of do you have in terms of assuring that participants and everybody is going to keep things confidential?
That is another great question. We as staff members have a confidentiality agreement that we agree to, where we don't talk about the weekend. We don't talk about people that attended the weekend. Any paperwork that's filled out by a man that's attending the weekend is actually destroyed, except for the release. We have to keep the release, but any self-disclosure that happens on any piece of paper throughout the weekend that's in our possession during the weekend is burned on Sunday.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's burned in front of the men. So they're standing around the fire, and the data guy brings all the papers and says, "We're burning. This is all your material, just so that you know it's gone." And as the data person, I've been that on weekends before, and you carry that paperwork around with you, and it doesn't leave your person, basically. You have it, and you're protecting it at all costs throughout the whole weekend. So confidentiality is a very, very important thing. I mean, in the GBTQ community, it's even more important because it's the underlying basis of trust. They do ask for people to disclose medical information. We have a physician that goes through all that stuff. We have a health worker that's on staff to address any physical issues that may come up or health issues that come up. You won't necessarily know who that is. But there is somebody on staff that is equipped to handle that. But one of the things that I remember early on was people struggled with on the traditional weekends was if a man was on going through the weekend, if he was HIV positive or not. So they've rewritten a lot of the safety protocols to address just treating everybody as if their, you know, fluids were bad or not bad, but
contaminated.
Contaminated. Yeah, I was trying to find a word that wasn't like derogatory, but yeah. So that's been resolved. And now the next piece that we are challenged with a lot of times is defining or identifying trans men on the weekend, because there's certain things that they may or may not be comfortable doing, but we don't want to call them out to the point where we're separating them from the group. So we address that by calling them before the weekend and saying, how much do you want us to call you out? How much do you want to participate differently than the rest of the men? Because, you know, a man may not have had top surgery, and there may be a process where they may not have their top on. That may make them feel uncomfortable. So we want to make sure that that's all addressed in at least their best interests are at heart, but we don't want to necessarily break confidentiality. So they're very good about making sure that people's boundaries are established and protected.
Are there other questions? Rick.
Tim, I really am intrigued by this whole program. I feel like a lot of it is about male bonding. And I feel like it goes deep into the psyches of a lot of people. And there's kind of a natural tendency, I think, among men to bond. We see it every day here in Iowa, of course. In small little cafes all over the state, there are groups of men, farmers and others, that come together at the coffee shops and they sit around daily or at least weekly and do this, what I call bonding. If you're in the Middle East, it might be around a hookah. I mean, we don't know, but there just right. seems to be a natural tendency. And it sounds like one of the ways that you get this bonding to occur is through ritual. And I think a lot of these same men do not care much for Christian rituals and do not actually go to church, but they actually do have a need for some kinds of rituals. Without actually telling us what the rituals are, could you give us some information about that?
Yeah, so it's not Christian. It's not a religious organization at all. I want to be very clear with that. We have been gifted by the Lakota Nation's use of some of their cultural processes that they have in place. I want to say it's almost earth science based. They talk a lot about directions, north, south, east, and west, and the energetic hierarchy, the archetypes according to that. So like you've got the north, which is your king, east is lover, west is warrior, or south is warrior, west is magician. And each one of those entities has a different part in our lives, and we carry all four of those with us. So that's kind of some of it that we go through from a ritual perspective. We do, there is some processes that you're blindfolded for. And again, you're told that this is going to be a blindfolded process. If you don't want to participate or you don't want to wear a blindfold, that's perfectly okay too. We do some physical activities where there's some challenges that take place, where teams have to work together in order to achieve the ultimate goal. That's a huge bonding moment. Actually, on a weekend, when that process happens, that's when you can see these teams form and really solidify. We break all the participants into teams. So there'll be, you know, four or five men on a team. And there'll maybe four or five teams on a weekend. And that's done early on Friday. And by the end of Friday, they're almost a fraternity, these teams are. They're like so bonded. And it's kind of cool to watch. Yeah. And then go ahead. I'm sorry.
My question would be, during these weekends, are we talking about 50 people or 500 people or something in between? And and do people go often after the first one, they go to a lot of others too?
Well, so participant wise, we don't go over 40. That's like the cap. You have to get special dispensation in order to go over 40 men. Most weekends are anywhere between 14 and 28. And that seems like that's, if I had it my way, we'd cap them at 28, because I think any more than that, as from a staff perspective, it's really hard. My weekend was 36 that I went through. So we had six teams of six on my weekend. And to answer your question about do men want to continue to do weekends or staff weekends afterwards, is that what?
Well, not staff them necessarily, but just to participate again and again.
They did do a weekend for men who had gone through the weekend years ago so they could re-experience that again. I don't, you know, Rick, I don't know if you would get the same thing out of it the second time around because, you know, the curtain's been lifted for
you. That's right. I agree.
I think part of the mystery or part of the magic of the weekend is the mystery and not knowing what's happening next and that blind faith that you just, these guys know what they're doing. I just got to follow them, you know? And if you already know the agenda and the schedule, it loses its oomph, I think.
Okay.
Go ahead. You have integration groups though, and then follow on other training opportunities that are new, rich experiences.
Right. Yeah. We do, we do multicultural trainings. We do, like leader track trainings. There's an LT1, an LT2, and an LT3 that are available. There's, a couple issues and isms. One, there's a sexuality training. There's just a number of different trainings that you can do. And of course, the I groups that you can sit in. I was, before we started the call, I was telling David about my I group did a Mondo Zen training. So a meditation training. So we hired a Mondo Zen coach to online basically over the last 5 weeks teach us how to meditate. So we do all kinds of things like that.
Tim, I would anticipate that some really close friendships could be born, particularly on a particular team that you're talking about. Tell us a little bit about that afterwards.
Okay, well, so my I group that I sit in, okay, is four men, including myself. I sit in Omaha. One guy sits in Kansas City. One guy sits in Asheville, North Carolina, and the other guy sits out in Portland. That's my I group. And we all met on a weekend. And we've been doing our I group for 4 years now. Twice a year, we travel to somebody's town or somewhere so that we can be in person. Brian, the guy in Asheville, actually married my husband and I. He was our pastor for our wedding.
Wow.
And so, I mean, and these are, it almost gets me kind of wispy-eyed thinking about, because I love these guys. I love these guys more than I love my brothers, you know? So to answer your question, absolutely. There are relationships that are built not on superficial stuff, but deep, deep feelings.
Is there any attempt to assign people like a sponsor would be for Alcoholics Anonymous, that kind of thing?
You're not assigned a mentor. On Sundays, some communities, it depends on the community or the area, they do a mentor process where if there are men on staff that want to mentor the new members, they basically say, I'm willing to do that. And then the new guys, the participants, can go ask them if they want to do that. It works really well. I basically got sober when I was 21, so I grew up in that whole sponsorship type culture. So it was pretty easy transition for me to go from a sponsor, which I still have, to a mentor. So it wasn't a problem for me, but some people have a bit of a challenge with that. That said, most everybody that's an MKP is more than willing to help somebody else. So mentors are everywhere. My mentor now lives in Chicago.
Yeah. Are there other questions? Excellent. Tim, I want to thank you and thank you for your participation. Thank you for your willingness to participate virtually. We're all learning to do this more efficiently all the time, and it is greatly appreciated. The work that you and your organization are doing is critical and of vital importance to those who still today are trying to find and claim, embrace their authentic selves, whether they're gay, straight, trans, whatever, to claim their authentic selves. Everyone needs to be reminded that there is a virtual support meeting on the first Monday of every month. David Cotton can give you particulars on that and also particulars about the first Monday of every month session is in our recent FFBC newsletter. And next Monday is the first Monday of August, so there would be that opportunity to participate as soon as next Monday. And David, can you tell me again what time that is on Monday? 5:30?
It's the first Monday of every month, so it's the first Monday at 6:30. So the next will be in September.
Oh, it's September. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So that opportunity is available, and if anyone would like to explore participation in that, get a hold of me or get a hold of David Cotton, and we can provide you with the particulars on that. Our next meeting, whether it's in person or virtual, will be on September the 4th. So, you know, we are exploring the potential of live streaming our in-person meetings for those who cannot attend in person. We haven't figured out all the logistics on that, but Hoyt Sherman has indicated that they have the technology available, or will have soon the technology available, so that we can allow for participation live streaming. We have some logistics to work out on that, because we don't want, for example, to compromise people's confidentiality or anonymity in participating in our meetings, because we do have people who come to our meetings when we're in person who are not out, or they're not fully out, or they're not comfortably out in all contexts, and we would not want a streaming to compromise them or make them feel uncomfortable. We're also about to initiate an online new RSVP meeting reminder system that should streamline our process for RSVP. We're going to step into the 21st century here and actually do it with greater efficiency and take advantage of the technology. And we are also about to initiate some additional options for paying dues and making contributions online. And there are some expenses associated with that change. The expenses for that, for accomplishing that change, are being contributed by Brad Holland and Joe Rates and Ascendant Wealth Management. They have graciously agreed to cover, underwrite the cost of those, of this transition into this new technology, and should make us even more efficient going forward. If there is no other items that anyone wants to raise, we will. Yes, David.
One real quick. I just want to let the group know that my employer, Arion, donated $3,000 to the scholarship program this last week. They're also known as Iowa Network Services. So I was, I asked and they said yes. So I was very pleased for that.
Outstanding. That's great, David. Thank you very much. Anything else from anyone?
Yeah, really quick. Hi, my name's Connor. I work for Iowa Safe Schools, and we're working on a history project of the LGBTQ community in the state of Iowa. So if you have any material that you'd be interested in sharing with us that we could publish in a certain format, if you could email me in my email, which I'll list here, that would be really great.
Rick, did you hear that? Rick Miller is with the Pride Center, and he's been involved in accumulating and assembling historical information about the LGBTQ community in Iowa. Are you aware of the initiative over there in Iowa City where they're doing some of this kind of work?
Yeah, so I talked with them in Iowa City. A lot of them are doing stuff to archive at the university. And what we're wanting to do is compile like something like a book that we could share with our LGBTQ youth, just so they can know kind of how the movement has progressed over the last 50 to 75 years in Iowa.
That would be very worthwhile. There's also a one institute at the at UCLA, and it's an archive library, and it's for LGBTQ materials, and we send a copy of our monthly newsletter to them to be archived at one institute, so that they have a full set of our newsletters clear back to, well, when we started, 1996.
Well, Jonathan, wouldn't that be a possibility to supply maybe some of the newsletters to that, to Iowa State Schools for that purpose? Because that would be a history. Supply some of the FFBC newsletters to the Iowa State Schools for their for the purpose of education.
We could certainly do that, because we in the, so those newsletters, we are in fact recording in the newsletters the the articles that are written. We're recording some of the history that's going on over that period of time. Connor, I can look into putting together a set of the newsletters and get that to you. If you could get me your contact information, why, I'd be glad to try and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I put my email in the Zoom chat, but what would be a good email for you, and I can follow up there?
Use Jonathan, J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, mm-hmm. Wilson, W-I-L-S-O-N, at davisbrownlaw.com.
Jonathan Wilson at davisbrownlaw.com.
Correct. Yep, that will get to
well,
me.
Well, and is Connor, are you familiar with the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus and what they've done?
Yes, so we've reached out to them. We're looking to see if they can provide us any of their programs or other materials as well.
And they have already sent to over 400 different districts, both private and public schools, an incredible program of curriculum about LGBT. Mm-hmm. That they can use in a wide variety of ways in the schools. It would be perfect for GSAs to use this material on a monthly basis. It's actually broken down into 8 parts, so it fits nicely into a school year. So anyway, I hope that might be of some help to you. You don't need to reinvent the wheel here. Just add to the wheel.
Right, exactly. Right, well, perfect. Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it, and I'll be in touch with you for sure.
That's great. Okay, anything else from anyone? Hearing nothing but crickets, I'm going to adjourn our meeting and admonish you to stay safe until our next meeting on September 4th and beyond. And thank you very much for participating today. And again, Tim, thank you very much for your presentation. It was very intriguing, very informative, very worthwhile, and we appreciate that. And David Cotton, thank you again for hosting our meeting. Goodbye, all.
Goodbye. Thank you.